This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy, but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Imagine a warm summer night in 1942 in the sleepy town of Pascagoula, Mississippi, a place where everyone knows everyone and doors are rarely locked. Yet, as the sun sets, an air of unease creeps in. This was the summer when an unknown figure, a shadow in the night, would slip silently into homes, leaving behind only a terrifying calling card, a lock of freshly cut hair. Welcome to another episode of All Things Mysterious, the podcast where the realms of true crime, the supernatural, and the unexplained converge. I'm your host, Matt.
I'm Jordan.
Let's dive right in. Pascagoula, a serene coastal town nestled along the Mississippi Gulf Coast, was a picture of Southern charm in the early 1940s. White picket fences, children playing in the streets, church bells ringing on Sunday mornings. It was a community where trust was a way of life and neighbors looked out for one another. But beneath this idyllic veneer, the world was in turmoil. It was the height of World War II. Young men from Pascagoula had gone off to fight in distant lands, leaving their families to cope with the anxiety and hardship of wartime. This sense of vulnerability was the perfect breeding ground for the terror that was about to descend on this peaceful town. It started innocently enough, if such a word can be used to describe a crime. This story is by far one of the weirdest ones I've done.
I mean, you mentioned leaving locks of hair?
Freshly cut locks of hair.
Yeah, that's really freaking creepy.
Yeah, it really is. And it does get worse than that.
Ew.
Not to mention that basically all the victims were children.
And you say that I do the weird ones.
This is one of those stories that technically has a conclusion, but technically it's not. And then there also may be a cryptid connection to it too. So it's going to be an interesting story.
All right, bring it on then.
Let's get to the first victims. Mary Evelyn Briggs and Edna Marie Heidel were two vibrant young students attending Our Lady of Victories, a quaint Catholic school nestled in the heart of Pascagoula. Mary Evelyn, with her long auburn hair and quick wit, was known for her infectious laughter and love for music. Edna Marie, equally lively, had golden blonde locks and a penchant for storytelling, often captivating her friends with tales of adventure and romance. Their dormitory room, a modest space with two single beds adorned with floral quilts, was a sanctuary of friendship and shared dreams. The girls would often stay up late, whispering about their futures, giggling over shared secrets, and offering each other comfort in times of worry. On the night of June 5th, 1942, the air was thick with the sticky heat of a Mississippi summer. Their dormitory was quiet. The only sounds were the rhythmic croaks of frogs and the distant hum of crickets. As the town of Pascagoula slept, an ominous figure crept through the shadows, making his way to the school grounds. Unbeknownst to Mary and Edna, their peaceful slumber was about to be shattered. The Phantom Barber, as he would come to be known, silently pried open a window and slipped into their room like a wisp of smoke. With the precision of a surgeon, he approached their beds, scissors gleaming in the moonlight. Mary was the first to stir, a cold draft brushing against her cheek. Her eyes fluttered open and she froze in terror, feeling the cold metal of the scissors grazing her scalp. She tried to scream, but the figure clamped a hand over her mouth, muffling her cries. In the bed beside her, Edna remained blissfully unaware, lost in the depths of her dreams. In mere moments, the intruder vanished as silently as he had appeared, leaving behind only a lock of Mary Evelyn's auburn hair on the pillow. As the reality of what happened sunk in, the girls' dormitory was filled with the panic screams, waking the entire school. The news of the bizarre incident spread like wildfire through Pascagoula. Parents rushed to the school, their faces etched with worry. The local sheriff, a man named Oscar Flanagan, arrived at the scene, determined to get to the bottom of this unsettling crime. Sheriff Flanagan, a stout man with a stern demeanor, began his investigation by interviewing the distraught girls. Mary and Edna recounted their horror experience, their voices trembling with fear. Flanagan noted that the precision of the break-in, the calculated nature of the attack, and the eerie fact that nothing was stolen except for a few strands of hair. Initial theories ranged from a deranged barber with a hair fetish to a more sinister explanation involving dark rituals. The community, already on edge due to the war, was now gripped by a new fear. Parents began locking the doors at night, keeping their children close and casting suspicious glances at strangers. The town of Pascagoula was no longer the peaceful haven it once was. The Phantom Barber had cast a long dark shadow over the community, and the fear of his return lingered in every household. Little did they know, this was only the beginning of a nightmare that would haunt them for months to come.
Those are some interesting theories, though.
Yeah, that's to say the least. It is the most interesting theory, I would say. This is just such a weird story. I don't get it.
Did he take the hair and leave the girl?
What happened was he cut a piece of hair off, or a lock of hair. He left part of it on the bed, and then he took the other part.
And the girl
was untouched.
That's just really weird. And it really does sound fetishy to me. I'm sorry, but it really does. Yeah. That also would have been up on my list.
It does. And it's weird to me that Mary was the only one who had her hair cut. Like, Edna wasn't even touched.
I would have been like, all right, someone's just real freaking weird.
And like I said, it gets more dark.
This was his first infraction?
The first known one, at least. The first one that definitely started the whole frenzy, if you want to call it. These were young girls in a Catholic school.
Absolutely. And pissed me off.
Yeah. I feel like that would probably suck trying to fix it. I get its hair and it'll grow back, but I know girls' hair in general is really hard to manage, and especially grow at a normal rate.
There's something about your hair. It becomes a part of your appearance and a part of almost who you are. Even my hair. Matt, you see me all the time. I don't particularly put a lot of effort into my appearance.
That's true. I didn't mean that to sound bad.
I appreciate it, buddy. Thank you so much.
I'm not going to say anything.
No, you're fine. I put on a t-shirt. I put on jeans. I wear the same sandals just about every single day. I don't wear makeup in the YouTube videos, honestly, and the TikToks. That's like the first time I've put on makeup for probably at least a year. I braid my hair and it looks wavy sometimes. But even then, I still take a lot of pride in my hair, which is really funny because I don't put any effort towards my appearance at all.
The first time she came to work with makeup on, I asked her who died and what funeral she's going to after work.
I'm pretty sure I was literally going to a funeral. Was I going to a funeral that day?
No. You just said that you felt like putting makeup on.
That's really weird. I don't remember that day.
That was a while ago.
It had to have been.
But the first time I ever seen you with makeup on.
Recall that day.
You're just like, I don't know, felt like putting makeup on.
That's really weird. I don't remember that day at all.
I do, because it's weird.
I straightened my hair today for the first time in I don't know how long, and that's more effort than I have put in I don't know how long. but there's something about your hair that is significant to you. Even me, who puts very little effort into my appearance, there's still something so significant about your hair. It's very disappointing when something's done to it, and it is very difficult to fix if a piece of it is chopped off.
Carol Petey was a bright, imaginative 6-year-old girl who lived with her parents in a cozy bungalow on the outskirts of Pascagoula. With her curly brown hair and big blue eyes, she was the apple of her parents' eyes. Carol loved playing in the garden, chasing butterflies, and pretending to be a princess in her own little world. The Petey family was close-knit. Mr. Petey worked at the local shipyard, contributing to the war effort, while Mrs. Petey was a homemaker dedicated to creating a warm and loving home for her family. Their evenings were filled with story time, family dinners, and the comforting routines of domestic life. On a sweltering night in late June, the Petey household was still. Carol lay in her bed, clutching her favorite teddy bear, lost in the peaceful dreams of childhood. The window above her bed was slightly ajar, allowing a gentle breeze to drift into the room, carrying with it the scent of blooming magnolias. In the dead of night, a shadowy figure approached the house. The phantom barber, his heart as cold as the steel of his scissors, had found his next target. He carefully cut the window screen and slipped into the room with the stealth of a ghost. Carol stirred slightly, her small hand clutching her teddy bear tighter. The intruder moved swiftly, his scissors glinting in the pale moonlight as he snipped a lock of her hair. Within moments, he was gone, leaving behind a scene that would haunt the Petey family forever. Mrs. Petey was the first to discover the horror. As she entered Carol's room to wake her for breakfast, she noticed the cut window screen and the hair on the pillow. Panic surged through her as she realized what had happened. Carol's beautiful curls had been crudely cut while she slept. She screamed, her voice a mix of fear and disbelief, waking Mr. Petey and sending a chill through the entire household. The Peteys immediately called the police, and soon their home was swarming with officers, neighbors, and reporters. The sense of violation and dread was palpable, and the once safe neighborhood now felt like a scene from a nightmare. News of the attack on little Carol Petey spread rapidly. The town, already on edge after the incident at Our Lady of Victories, was now in a state of full-blown panic. If the Phantom Barber could target an innocent child in her own home, no one was safe. Parents began taking drastic measures to protect their children. Windows were nailed shut, extra locks were installed on doors, and many families took to sleeping in shifts to keep watch through the night. The local hardware stores saw a surge in sales of locks, bars, and alarm systems. Law enforcement increased patrols and volunteers formed neighborhood watch groups, patrolling the streets with flashlights and makeshift weapons. Despite these measures, the fear was overwhelming. The image of the phantom barber slipping silently through the night, cutting locks of hair as trophies, had left an indelible mark on the psyche of Pascagoula. The town's sense of security was shattered, replaced by a pervasive sense of dread and helplessness. For the Petey family, the incident was a traumatic turning point. Carol, though unharmed physically, was deeply shaken. She would wake up crying from nightmares, her once carefree demeanor replaced by a constant state of anxiety. Mr. and Mrs. Petey struggled to reassure her, their own fears simmering just below the surface. As Pascagoula grappled with the reality of the Phantom Barber's reign of terror, the question on everyone's mind was the same. Who was this shadowy figure, and when would he strike again? The hunt for the Phantom Barber had taken on a new urgency as the town's collective fears reached a fever pitch.
I got really sad when you mentioned the curls, because when my little sister was really little, she had curls and we cut them and the curls didn't come back. Sad for a second, because it was just like, oh, the curls come back.
Yeah, not going to lie. This one hit close to home because my youngest, her hair is really curly. And she's not much older than this, so it definitely struck a chord. I can't even imagine having to go through something like that. And I get that some people are going to listen to this and say, oh, these people are overreacting. He didn't actually hurt them. He just cut a little bit of their hair off.
But he's still breaking and entering. And that's super freaking creepy.
Yeah. Even at first when I started reading this, it's not really bad. But then I started thinking about it. This town at this time was basically one of those small town communities, was really safe. Any kind of violation like this would be massive. The exaggeration that after they called, their house was crawling with police, neighbors, reporters, that was an exaggeration. There was probably not hundreds because the town's not that big, but there were dozens of people at their house because this was such a big thing.
I don't blame them because it's a violation.
Oh, yeah.
It's just creepy.
Yeah, because if he can get in to take a piece of their hair, what else is he going to do? Is he going to escalate? Is he going to stab someone with the scissors? What's going to happen?
Yeah, because right now he's just cutting hair. Is it going to escalate? At this point, it's a child. You're vulnerable. It's just terrifying.
And she was by far the youngest victim, but I will say it does escalate. Spoiler alert.
Great.
Mrs. Ruth Taylor was a well-respected member of the Pascagoula community. In her late 40s, she was known for her warm smile and her kindness to neighbors. Ruth lived with her husband, George, in a charming two-story home on Magnolia Street, a quiet and tree-lined neighborhood where everyone felt safe. The Taylor's home was a testament to their years of hard work and love. The white picket fence, blooming flower beds, and neatly trimmed lawn spoke of Ruth's dedication to making their house a home. George worked at the local shipyard, while Ruth often volunteered at the church, organizing community events and helping those in need. On the night of July 12, 1942, the Taylor household was still. George had fallen asleep reading the evening newspaper, and Ruth had retired to bed early after a busy day. The cool breeze from the open window offered a brief respite from the sweltering summer heat. In the dead of night, an ominous presence slipped through the neighborhood. The phantom barber had chosen his next target. He approached the Taylor house with a chilling calmness, cutting through the window screen with practiced ease. Ruth awoke to a faint noise, her senses tingling with unease. Before she could fully grasp what was happening, she felt a sharp pain on her head. The phantom barber, with a brutal twist, had struck her with an object, knocking her unconscious. He then snipped a lock of her hair and disappeared into the night as swiftly as he had come. George awoke to find his wife lying motionless beside him, blood trickling from a wound on her head. Panic surged through him as he called for an ambulance, his mind reeling with fear and confusion. Mrs. Taylor's injuries were more severe than any previous victim's. She was rushed to the hospital where doctors treated her head wound and stabilized her condition. The news of the attack spread rapidly, sending shockwaves through Pascagoula. This was no longer just a haircutting phantom. This was an assailant willing to harm his victim. The community's fear turned to outrage. Meetings were held and town halls were packed with concerned citizens demanding action. Sheriff Oscar Flanagan, now under immense pressure, intensified the investigation. Patrols were doubled and checkpoints were set up around town. The local newspaper ran daily updates, feeding the growing frenzy. Ruth's recovery was slow and painful. She bore the physical and emotional scars of the attack. Her sense of safety shattered. The Taylors, once pillars of calm in the community, were now symbol of the town's vulnerability. The escalation in violence made it clear that the phantom was growing bolder. The sense of terror that gripped Pascagoula was palpable. Parents held their children tighter, neighbors eyed each other with suspicion, and the once peaceful nights were now filled with anxious whispers and watchful eyes. The attack on Mrs. Taylor marked a turning point. The fear that had settled over Pascagoula was now accompanied by an urgent call for justice. The phantom's reign of terror had to end. But the question remained, who was this shadowy figure and why did he strike? As the community grappled with these questions, the hunt for the elusive criminal intensified, with law enforcement leaving no stone unturned in their pursuit.
I feel like Edward Scissorhands is getting a little excited here.
I think probably this has some of Edward Scissorhands was based on this loosely. I don't know for sure, though.
Fair.
But it sounds like something.
Doesn't it, though?
Yeah.
He's definitely obviously escalated at this point. Just cutting the hair is not enough anymore.
No, it gets worse.
My question now is the police and people, they're trying to figure out who it is, but they have quite literally nothing to go on.
Because at this point, he doesn't see the only indicator of his victims if they're female and have hair. That is his only criteria.
And there's not really any forensic stuff that they can do back then.
No, not really. This is 1942. They've got a little bit. They've got fingerprints, but he doesn't really leave fingerprints.
Exactly. So there's not a whole lot they can do at this point except question people and hope they figure something out, which would leave the whole community just absolutely in terror. And I can't blame them because that's how I would feel. And I'm sure that the police force feels the same way because they're doing the best they can, but they've got nothing either.
Yeah. And to me, it seems like it's someone from the community, because if it's an outsider, people are going to notice them, especially after the first, when they're kind of their suspicions starting to get raised. So that almost tells me that it's someone in the community, because this person is pre-picking his victims. It feels like he stalks them for a little bit, because he had to have known that, one, where her bedroom was and the fastest way to get in there. He would have to know that her husband fell asleep early. So he would have to watch him for at least some time. That seems like it's someone from within the community.
It would have to be, just for the blendability.
Yeah. And I think at this point, the community is starting to realize that, which is why they're starting to be suspicious of their neighbors now, because they think the same thing that I'm thinking. If it was an outsider, someone would have noticed them. But I will say it does get worse.
Thanks. I love it.
You're welcome. The Heidelberg family was a well-known and respected family. Dr. Frederick Heidelberg was a prominent physician, and his wife, Martha, was an active member of several local charities. They had two children, Robert and Alice, both in their early teens. The Heidelbergs lived in a two-story home on Oak Street, a symbol of their hard work and success. The Heidelberg residence, with its grand columns and manicured lawn, was a place of warmth and hospitality. The family was often seen enjoying their evenings on the porch, engaging in lively conversations and sharing laughter. It was a picture of tranquility, a stark contrast to the terror that would soon unfold. On the night of July 20th, 1942, the Heidelberg house was cloaked in an uneasy silence. The family had just returned from a social event and settled into their nighttime routines. Dr. Heidelberg retired to his study. Martha was tidying up the kitchen, and the children were already in bed, their dreams untroubled by the looming danger. As the clock struck midnight, an ominous figure moved through the shadows, approaching the Heidelberg home with a disturbing sense of purpose. The phantom barber, undeterred by the increased patrols and heightened security measures, had chosen his next target. The intruder carefully cut through the window screen of the children's bedroom. Robert and Alice slept soundly, unaware of the figure that slipped silently into their room. The phantom barber moved with precision of a predator, his eyes scanning the room for his next trophy. Alice, the younger of two, stirred slightly in her sleep. The intruder paused, his breath held, then continued his grim task. With a few quick snips, he cut a lock of Alice's hair. The sound was barely perceptible, but it was enough to wake Robert. He opened his eyes momentarily, paralyzed with fear as he saw the dark silhouette standing over his sister. Before Robert could scream, the phantom barber was gone, leaving behind a scene of confusion and terror. The children's cries woke their parents, who rushed into the room to find the cut window screen and Alice clutching her shorn hair, tears streaming down her face. Dr. Heidelberg, usually a figure of calm and control, was gripped by a mix of fear and anger. He immediately called the police, demanding swift action. The sight of his children's terror and the blatant violation of their home filled him with the resolve to see his menace brought to justice. The Heidelberg incident sent shockwaves through Pascagoula. If the phantom barber could infiltrate the home of a respected physician, no one was safe. The community's fear reached new heights and suspicion fell upon everyone. Neighbors who once greeted each other with friendly smiles now exchanged wary glances, each wondering if the culprit was among them. Media coverage of the incident was relentless. Headlines screamed of the phantom barber's latest victim, and the newspapers detailed the terror gripping the town. Radio broadcasts provided hourly updates, and the story even reached national news, painting Pascagoula as a town under siege by an invisible menace. Increased media attention only fueled the panic. Stories of the phantom barber became more elaborate, with rumors of his supernatural abilities spreading like wildfire. Some claimed he could walk through walls, while others believed he was a ghost, avenging some ancient wrong. The impact of the local psyche was profound. Parents kept their children indoors, curfews were strictly enforced, and the once bustling streets of Pascagoula became eerily quiet after dark. The phantom barber had not just stolen locks of hair, he had stolen the town's sense of security and peace. As fear and suspicion reached a fever pitch, the community's demand for justice grew louder. Sheriff Flanagan, now facing even more pressure, vowed to capture the phantom barber and restore peace to Pascagoula, but as the manhunt intensified, so did the mystery. Who was the phantom barber and why did he choose his victims? answers remained as elusive as the shadowy figure himself.
That is really bizarre, though.
Yeah. So I was being a little facetious. It doesn't actually get worse.
It got a little worse.
Miss Taylor was probably the one victim who was actually assaulted. But in this town's perception, the fact that he went after the physician's family was actually worse for them, because he obviously had much higher standing in the community. So yeah, in their point of view, this was worse than all the other victims, which if you think about it, seems messed up in its own right, but...
It is, because they're not really better or worse than anybody else, people.
At least in this community, they were a higher standing family. Obviously, they were richer than the other families. So to them, it just seemed like it was more of an invasion to go after the physician's family.
It makes sense, but they still never really caught the guy, or did they?
We'll get into that next.
I don't know if I like the look on your face.
They caught someone.
Again, I don't know if I really like the look on your face.
William Dolan was a name known to many in Pascagoula, though not always for the right reasons. A local chemist by trade, Dolan was a reclusive figure, often seen walking alone through the streets, his head buried in a book or muttering to himself. He had a reputation for being eccentric, even odd, and his behavior had long been a subject of local gossip. Dolan had a history of minor run-ins with the law. There were accusations of petty theft and disorderly conduct. The rumors swirled about his involvement in questionable activities. He was known to have a volatile temper, and his interactions with others were often marked by an hostility. Despite his unsettling demeanor, Dolan had managed to maintain a low profile, blended into the background of Pascagoula's daily life. That was, until the summer of 1942, when the community's growing fear and paranoia brought his name to the forefront of the search for the Phantom Barber. The turning point came when a local resident reported seeing Dolan near the scene of one of the Phantom attacks. The tip, combined with his odd behavior and previous run-ins with the law, made him a person of interest for Sheriff Flanagan and his team. On a sweltering July afternoon, law enforcement descended upon Dolan's modest home. Inside, they found a pair of scissors and several locks of hair, items that could easily be explained away, but in the charged atmosphere of fear, were damning evidence. Dolan was arrested on the spot, his protests of innocence drowned out by the officer's commands and the murmurs of the gathered crowd. The news of his arrest spread quickly, sending ripples of relief through the terrified community. Many felt a sense of vindication, believing that the Phantom Barber had finally been caught. The trial of William Dolan was a spectacle, drawing immense public and media attention. The courtroom was packed with curious onlookers, reporters, and the families of victims, all eager to see justice served. The prosecution painted Dolan as a disturbed individual with a penchant for bizarre and frightening behavior, using the scissors and locks of hair as key evidence. Dolan's defense argued that the evidence was circumstantial, highlighting his lack of a criminal history for violent crimes and questioning the reliability of witness testimonies. However, the climate of fear and the public's desire for a resolution played heavily against him. After a brief deliberation, the jury found Dolan guilty, and he was sentenced to a lengthy prison term. Despite the conviction, doubts lingered. Some residents and legal experts questioned the strength of the evidence and whether Dolan was truly the Phantom Barber. Was he a convenient scapegoat or the real culprit? These questions remained unanswered, leaving a shadow of uncertainty over the case. As the years passed, the story of the Phantom Barber and the arrest of William Dolan became a haunting chapter in Pascagoula's history. The fear and paranoia that had gripped the town gradually faded, but the mystery and the lingering doubts about Dolan's guilt left an indelible mark on the community.
I don't buy it.
No. So DNA testing wasn't a thing back then. And cutting off hair, you're not going to be able to really get DNA from it, because they actually get the DNA from the root of the hair, not the actual hair itself. So that won't help them anyways. But there was really no way to match it to the girls. And I don't know if they really took it any further, or if they just saw this guy's got locks of hair. He's guilty.
It would look pretty damning.
It would.
And it seems like it. But the part that gets me is this guy obviously had some priors. And he got caught for these priors, right? Is he really sneaky enough to be getting in and out of these places and stalking these people for the most part?
Yeah. And that's, you know, he's a reclusive figure. So he's probably got some kind of social anxiety. That's why I'm reclusive.
I mean,
So I don't think someone who is reclusive is going to go into someone's house and cut off someone's hair. I don't buy that, because if you're reclusive, especially if you have social anxiety, going into someone's house that you don't know would almost give you a panic attack.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it, because it doesn't 100% make sense.
It doesn't to me either.
Because the person that would be doing this would see it as a challenge. But this guy, he just wants to be home.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is the witness placing him near the scene of the crime. It's a small town. Him being close to the scene doesn't necessarily mean that he's guilty. My other question would be the timing, which honestly, there's not a whole lot on this story out there. Very few sources.
I can imagine.
So I don't know when the witness actually saw him. And if it was late at night, my question would be, why would the witness be awake at that time? That seems odd to me too. But I think ultimately the town wanted someone to pin this on to make themselves feel better. I think that's exactly what they did. They found someone that was an outskirt of the community, didn't really fit in. He was an outsider, and they just pinned it on him, made themselves feel better, and then got rid of him. And unfortunately, that's, I think, exactly what happened.
No, I have to agree, because he was a scapegoat. Obviously, there was the hair, and that's something that I can't necessarily contest.
There could be valid reasons. Maybe he had a life outside the community and he moved there later on. Maybe he had kids when he was younger that died and he kept locks of their hair.
You never know.
There's not a whole lot known about this guy. And there could be legitimate reasons why. Maybe he's got actual friends that come over from different areas. But just because, even if he does have locks of hair, does not necessarily mean that he's guilty.
No, it doesn't.
And especially because he has scissors doesn't mean he's guilty.
I have scissors. You have scissors. There are scissors here somewhere in the place we record.
It's confirmed. Jordan is the Phantom Barber.
I didn't even know it. Something else I did that I didn't know about.
Well, what if I told you that this may have a more supernatural explanation?
I wouldn't be surprised, because I know how you work.
Cryptids, the mysterious and often mythical creatures that roam the fringes of our reality, have always captivated human imagination. From Bigfoot to the Loch Ness Monster, these elusive beings are said to exist in the shadows just beyond the reach of scientific proof. They embody the unknown, the unexplained, and the fears that lurk in the darkest corners of our mind. In the case of Pascagoula's Phantom Barber, the idea of a cryptid connection emerged almost naturally. His ability to slip into homes undetected, leaving behind no more than a lock of hair, seemed almost supernatural. How could a mere human evade capture so effectively, moving like a shadow through the night? As the months of terror dragged on, whispers of the Phantom Barber being more than just a man began to circulate. Some locals believed he was a cryptid, a creature of the night with otherworldly abilities. Stories grew and evolved, each more fantastical than the last. Some claimed he could become invisible at will, others that he had the power to paralyze his victims with a mere touch. These legends found fertile ground in the already frightened minds of Pascagoula's residents. The arrest of William Dolan did little to quell these theories. Many argued that Dolan, an eccentric but ultimately human figure, couldn't possibly account for the almost mythical nature of the crimes. The community's need to make sense of the senseless acts fueled the belief in a more fantastical explanation. Even long after Dolan was behind bars, sightings of a shadowy figure lurking in the night continued to be reported. People spoke of strange noises, fleeting glimpses, and the unsettling feeling of being watched. The Phantom Barber had transcended his earthly form, becoming a legend, cryptid in his own right. The idea of the Phantom Barber as a cryptid seeped into Pascagoula folklore, blending fact and fiction into a narrative that both terrified and fascinated. Children's bedtime stories included warnings about the Phantom Barber, a boogeyman who would snip away your hair if you misbehaved. The tale became a part of the town's cultural fabric, a reminder of a time when fear reigned supreme. For the residents who lived through the summer of 1942, the impact was profound and lasting. The Phantom Barber left an indelible mark on Pascagoula's collective memory. The rational explanation of Dolan's arrest and conviction never fully erased the sense of mystery and dread. The idea that something more than human had prowled their streets at night lingered, a chilling reminder of the unknown. The legend of the Phantom Barber continues to be told, a story passed down through generations. It serves as a cautionary tale, a piece of local history, and a testament to the human need to explain the inexplainable. Whether seen as a cryptid or a cunning criminal, the Phantom Barber's shadow still looms large over Pascagoula, the ghost of fear's past that refuses to fade away.
It could be.
Not gonna lie, but Phantom Barber is actually classified as a cryptid.
Really? I still see it as a person, but I guess I could see it as a cryptid, but it just seems more with the human motivation to me.
It's odd either way. I think it's hard to... I can see both points of view. I obviously think Dolan was not guilty at all. Definitely weird. I don't think he was actually the actual suspect. I'm not going to dismiss a cryptid connection because it's funny how these stories evolve. And the fact that this cryptid connection almost started during the crimes, which is weird to me.
That is weird.
Usually it's further down the line. But they got a point. The fact that this guy could get in and out, almost unheard of for the most part. Because obviously the victims woke up, but none of the other, they didn't wake up until he was doing the crime or right after he had already cut their hair off. So it's weird to me that I could understand like the first two victims maybe, but when people are already on edge, it seems weird that people didn't sleep lighter. And this always goes back to my original philosophy in life is if you don't have air conditioner, bad things happen.
I have to agree. I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird story, and it's a weird motivation.
Yeah, because honestly, when I first went through it, like my first thought was, why don't these freaking people just start closing their windows?
I have to agree with you, but I guess back then, did they not really have air conditioning or anything else? And I'm sorry, but I probably would also leave my windows open because I'm not dying a heat stroke.
Yeah, basically their only form of cooling off was opening the windows at night. So I get it. Honestly, I would love to keep my window open at night just because I love like the cool breeze and like the smell of nature coming into my room. But I don't like leaving my window open because I don't know. It freaks me out. Just thinking somebody's going to crawl into my window. Or worse, someone just stands outside your window and stares at you. Ugh.
Well, you just get dogs. They will alert you every single time. My dogs alert me if my neighbors approximately 3 blocks away are home. I'm certainly aware if there's anything happening just outside my house.
Well, that's why I said my dogs alert me when someone 5 miles away comes home.
Yeah, if there's a leaf that moves outside, I am aware of it. If a blade of grass happens to blow in the wind, I'm very aware of it.
They take over after their owner.
Yeah, they don't shut up. I don't shut up either. It's fine. I get it.
As we look back on the summer of 1942, the tale of the Phantom Barber of Pascagoula stands out as a dark chapter in the town's history. It began with the inexplicable break-ins at Our Lady of Victories, where Mary Evelyn Briggs and Edna Marie Heidel awoke to find their hair shorn in the dead of night. The terror spread when 6-year-old Carol Petey became the next victim, her innocence shattered by the same sinister hand. The attack on Mrs. Ruth Taylor marked a violent escalation, with the Phantom Barber striking her in the head before disappearing into the night. This event heightened the community's fear, leading to increased security measures and a widespread manhunt. The Heidelberg incident only deepened the mystery as the Phantom Barber managed to infiltrate the home of a respected physician, leaving behind a lock of hair and a town in turmoil. Despite the arrest and conviction of William Dolan, questions lingered about his guilt and the true identity of the Phantom Barber. Speculation about the Phantom Barber being a cryptid added a layer of supernatural intrigue, blending fact and fiction into a chilling narrative that has become a part of Pascagoula's folklore. The town's collective memory of the events remains a testament to the enduring power of fear and mystery. Fear has a way of gripping a community, spreading like wildfire, and altering the very fabric of daily life. In Pascagoula, the fear of the Phantom Barber brought people together in their vigilance, yet also drove them apart with suspicion. The line between reality and legend blurred as the unknown became a canvas for the darkest corners of the human psyche. The question of whether the real Phantom Barber was truly caught remained a haunting mystery. Was William Dolan merely a convenient scapegoat, or was there something more elusive at play? The lack of definitive answers keeps the story alive, a lingering ghost that continues to evoke curiosity and fear. The Phantom Barber of Pascagoula remains a chilling reminder that sometimes the scariest monsters are the ones we can't see. They are the shadows that move the night, the unexplained events that challenge our sense of security. in every whisper of wind, in every creak of a floorboard. The legacy of the Phantom Barber lives on, a testament to the power of the unknown. Thank you for joining us on this journey through all things mysterious. If you've enjoyed uncovering these mysteries with us, please show your support by liking, subscribing, and following us on your favorite listening platform. For more content and ways to stay connected, don't forget to check out our links in the description below.
As always, we keep you guessing.